We've been talking about the Gospel of Mark as the OG, as the original Gospel, because it is the first one. Matthew and Luke are written with Mark already sitting on the table next to those authors. John's written significantly later. And it's helpful to know what's going on in the time when Mark is writing. So Mark's writing, we're pretty sure, in the 60s AD. And the 60s AD are a really tumultuous time in both Roman and Jewish history. Let me read you a little bit about what Tacitus, a non-Christian Roman historian, wrote about this time frame. He says, "The history on which I am entering is that of a period rich in disasters, terrible with battles, torn by civil struggles, horrible even in peace. Four emperors, meaning emperors of Rome, fell by the sword. There were three civil wars, more foreign wars, and often both at the same time. Italy was distressed by disasters unknown before or returning after the lapse of the ages. Beside the many misfortunes that befell mankind, there were prodigies in the sky and on the earth, warnings given by thunderbolts, and prophecies of the future, both joyful and gloomy, uncertain and clear." For the Christians, particularly the Jewish Christians, but for the Christians in general, this time period is even more tumultuous. So in the 60s AD, the first really pervasive persecutions of Christians by the Roman Empire begin under the Emperor Nero. We also lose some of the great pillars of the church. Both Peter and Paul are killed during that Neronian persecution in the 60s AD. And there's a war that breaks out between the Jewish people and the Roman Empire. It's called the First Jewish War, the First Jewish Revolt, and it lasts from 66 AD to 70 AD. And with all of this going on, as Mark is writing, it feels like the world is sort of descending into chaos. Right? It feels like it might be the end. Now, by the way, it wasn't the end. And by the way, we also have that experience, don't we? We have plenty of times we look around in our world, and while it's not as bad as the 60s AD, we can say, boy, things are really messed up, and lots of bad things are happening, and we see wars, and we see famine, and we see natural disasters happening, and what's going on? And it's very easy to start thinking, hey, maybe we are living in that sort of emergency situation. I have a friend named Peter Venkman, and Peter Venkman, I think, expresses this very, very well in a movie called Ghostbusters. I'm going to play a clip for you. Oh, I can quote it if I have to. Is it not going to work? Okay, that's fine. Well, let me tell you what Peter Venkman says. He says, hey, we are heading for a disaster of biblical proportions. And the mayor, Lenny, says, what do you mean biblical proportions? And Ray says, real, I've seen this movie too many times, real wrath of God kind of stuff. We're talking about fire and brimstone falling from the sky. And Egon says, 40 years of darkness, mass hysteria. Oh, and then, Peter Venkman gets back in and he says, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, right? And I love this idea, first of all, that human sacrifice and dogs and cats living together are the two signs of the end, right? But I love this idea that we can so often in our world say, oh my gosh, it just seems like everything's falling apart, right? And that's how they felt when Mark was writing. And so Mark says, hey, let me take you back to some words of Jesus, because I need you to know that nothing happening in our time in the 60s AD, or nothing happening in this time in 2024 AD, none of it is taking Jesus by surprise, right? Jesus isn't surprised or worried or concerned. In fact, he knows what's coming. He sees it coming. And he wants us to see. He wants to deliver us from all of this, even from the fear of the future. And so in this passage, Again and again, Jesus gives a simple command to the people, and I'm a little bit frustrated by our English translation because you lose this repetition, but Jesus keeps using the word blepo, which in Greek means to see. And so in verse 5 and in verse 9 and in verse 23 and in verse 33, he says, you see like the language beware or keep alert. It's the same word every time, and it just means see, blepete, see. I want you to see. I want you to be watching. I want you to understand. And it doesn't just mean keep your eyes open. It means I want you to see all that is coming through the lens of my teaching, right? I want you to see all that's coming through the lens of the story of Jesus. Part of the deliverance that God gives us in Christ is he gives us eyes to see so that the future doesn't have to frighten us. So three big things I think that Jesus wants us to see in this passage, okay? The first, actually, before we even get into those, please notice that the disciples asked Jesus a very specific question. The question they ask is, what's going to happen to the temple, right? Jesus says the temple is going to be destroyed, and they want to know, tell me about the temple, okay? So Jesus is going to answer that question, but he's going to do way more than just answer that question, okay? So hold on to that little nugget. We're going to come back. Three things Jesus asks the disciples to see. We're going to go through this passage in order. The first thing is he wants them to see that worldly suffering will happen, and it's not a sign of the end, right? So in verse 5, Jesus began to say to them, blepete, see that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, I am he, false messiahs. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. There will be earthquakes, there will be famines. Don't freak out, right? And then in verse 9, as for yourselves, blepete, see, they will hand you over to councils. You'll be beaten in synagogues. You'll be persecuted for your faith. And the good news must be proclaimed to all nations. What Jesus wants to say really simply is, hey, all the bad stuff that happens in our world, unfortunately, is kind of business as usual in a world of sin, right? In this world of brokenness, in this world of people who are consumed by their self-centeredness, all this stuff is going to happen. And I'm not minimizing its importance, and I'm not saying it's not awful, and I'm not saying it shouldn't move us to compassion. I'm just saying, don't panic, right? Don't panic. And I think Jesus would say, don't spend all your time obsessed with every little detail, hoping and thinking that perhaps this is a sign of the end that we've been waiting for. In fact, he even tells us at the end of our passage, no one knows the hour or the day, right? Not the angels, not Jesus himself, just the Father. So don't think you're going to figure it out. Jesus says, this is sadly business as usual. And so instead of panicking, instead of becoming obsessed with the end times, instead of trying to come up with a timeline for when Jesus is going to come back, Jesus says, why don't you look for opportunities in this broken world to share the good news? Remain faithful in good times and bad. Don't get drug astray to false messiahs and false prophets. I want you to see that this is but the birth pangs. And I think this is a huge idea. Jesus says, see that this world and all its turmoils are like in the process of birth. I have three children. And for all three of them, I was with Krista throughout the process of them being born. And it was traumatic for me, probably more traumatic for her, I'm going to guess. But it was pretty intense to watch. Really, really amazing and beautiful, but just intense. I understand that it was probably pretty painful, right? Yeah, painful? Yeah, oxytocin, right, we don't know. Okay. The amazing thing that happens after birth, right, is if we have a normal, healthy birth, we sort of forget, right? Actually, there's a chemical called oxytocin that gets released in our bloodstream, helps us bond with our baby, but it also makes us sort of begin to forget the pain that we just went through. I don't have oxytocin released in my bloodstream when my kids are born, so I have a better memory, weirdly, of what my wife went through than she does, right? And let me tell you, it was rough, okay? And I think that's exactly what Jesus is trying to get us to see, right? He wants us to see the world and all its brokenness and all the sorrow and all the suffering around us, not as something to be passed over, like it's legitimately sad, right? We should be moved to compassion. We should be moved to help people. But when he comes, when Christ arrives, it will be like we have forgotten all of that sorrow. It'll be like we've forgotten all of that suffering. All of a sudden, everything will get worked back into this beautiful picture where we have forgotten all the hard and are overwhelmed with joy. And so if we see the world that way, if we see the coming of Jesus as this incredible, beautiful thing that's going to make sense of all of the mess of our world that we're living in today, then it begins to change how we live, doesn't it? It begins to change the fact, I don't have to live in overwhelming fear. I don't have to live in overwhelming panic. I don't have to worry about what's going to happen next week or next month or next year or tomorrow. I can just trust that after the birth pains comes this new life, right? Comes this new kingdom. Whatever happens in my life now, I have the privilege to live without fear because I know what comes next. Jesus says, first, I want you to see the world and all its chaos as just the anticipation of my return. Second thing Jesus says is he says, I want you to pay attention to this temple. What's the big question? What's going to happen to the temple, right? That's what the disciples want to know. Jesus says, all right, let's talk about the temple. We're going to get into the weeds a little bit. Jesus says in verse 14, when you see the desolating sacrilege set up where it ought not to be, let those in Judea flee to the mountains. The one on the housetop must not go down or enter the house to take anything away. The one in the field must not go back to get a coat. What are those who are pregnant or nursing infants? Hopefully it's not winter. Right? Jesus is not talking about the end of the world here, right? I think pretty clearly, if you're living in Wausau, you will not need to flee from Judea. Judea is a really long way away, right? At the end of the world, you won't need a coat. At the end of the world, you won't matter if it's winter or summer or spring, right? So Jesus is talking about the destruction of the temple, right? That's what he's giving them signs for. That's what they asked for signs about. He's saying, hey, this will come, right? The temple will be destroyed. And let me tell you, you need to get ready for it. So this happens in 70 AD. At the end of the first Jewish war against Rome from 66 to 70 AD, the Jews lose and the Romans enter Jerusalem and eventually they destroy the temple. It's never again rebuilt. That's why there's no temple today. And it is catastrophic for the Jewish people. But Jesus is saying, for you Jewish Christians, for you Gentile Christians, it need not be so. One author, whose name is Gettert, says, quote, the Jews resisted the Romans with more passion than ever, as if it were a kind of unexpected piece of luck to fall fighting against a foe far outnumbering them. They were not overcome until a part of the temple had caught fire. Then some impaled themselves voluntarily on the swords of the Romans. Others slew each other. Others did away with themselves or leaped into the flames. They all believed, especially the last, that it was not a disaster but victory, salvation, and happiness to perish together with the temple. Gettert continues, but Jesus says the disciples are to flee, not because they fear what the enemy will do, but because God desires them to absent themselves when everything stands poised for the divine judgment to fall. When the judgment falls, all who will trust in themselves, their might, their leaders, their election, or their temple will be judged along with the religious system they represent. All who take their stand with Jesus will leave the temple and the city to its fate. Jesus says again, I just want you to see. I want you to see that my new covenant no longer needs this building. My new covenant no longer needs these animal sacrifices. My new covenant no longer needs this system of religion, of rules, of trying to manipulate God, of being good enough to make God to like you. My new system no longer needs this setup of temple hierarchy where the poor oppress the rich and where the powerful make their living off the poor. Jesus says, That's no longer part of who I want us to be. So you can stay there until the Romans come, but when they show up, let God's judgment fall. By the way, at the end of this passage, there are two confusing parables that Jesus gives. One parable about a fig tree. I don't know what's going on with Jesus this week, but he's really into figs. And then one parable about a master leaving his house and coming home, right? And they have competing messages. The fig tree parable says, "From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you shall know that summer is near. So also when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates." Okay? Clearly, the message is there will be signs. Follow the signs. You'll know what's going to come. The next parable says, "About that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son nor the Father. Be alert, for you do not know when the time will come." Those don't go together, right? So the fig tree parable is Jesus saying, hey, you can know when Jerusalem will be destroyed. You can know the answer to your question about the temple. I can give you some signs for that. But there's a bigger question at stake. The bigger question is, when's all the bad stuff going to stop? When are the wars going to end? When's the world going to be put right so there's no longer famine or earthquakes or fires or plagues? When is this world going to be reordered the way it was designed to be? And that's a question bigger than just the fall of the temple. And you don't get to know the date for that. But let me tell you the end story. After that suffering, sometime after the temple's destroyed, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light and the stars will be falling from heaven and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. Then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. Jesus says, I want you to see that our hope is not in beating the Romans or losing to the Romans. Our hope is not in our ability to make the world right. One day, Jesus is coming back. We don't get to know when. We don't get to know when. But one day, Jesus is coming back. And when he does, everything changes. Oh, by the way, so Jesus says the sun will be darkened, the moon will fail to give its light, the stars will be falling from the sky, the powers of the heavens will be shaken. He's not saying those are signs of his coming, because we don't get any signs of his coming. He's saying when he comes, the whole cosmic creation, earth and heaven, will all shake and be in awe at the coming of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. When Jesus shows up, like, the physical world and the spiritual world will all be like rocked. And you cannot miss it. Jesus says, hey, you know what? There's going to be a lot of people that say, hey, I'm the Messiah. Follow me. I'm a prophet. God knows what you want to do. Let me tell you 10 rules to make your life better. And Jesus says, no, you're not going to miss it when I come back. Right? Like, the whole world will notice when I come back. It will be unmistakable. And when Jesus comes back, he comes back to deliver us from a broken world, from broken systems, from people and nations committed to evil and opposed to God, from spiritual evil. Stars usually represent angels, right, in the Bible, and certainly the powers of the heavens are the spiritual beings, the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms, as Paul calls them. Jesus comes back to deliver us from death itself. And then Jesus gives us this parable and he says, you don't get to know when. I'll give you some clues about the fall of the temple, but you don't get to know when I'm going to come back. And that's intentional because I want you to always be ready. And this is the last thing he says. See, I want you to see his return as imminent all the time. I want you to live your life ready for Jesus to show up because it could be any moment. A couple of years ago at our Ash Wednesday service, I showed a trailer. Oh, this, I don't know how our technology is doing today. I showed a trailer of a movie called The Bucket List, and I actually want to share that trailer with you again if it's working. Let's see if we can play that. That looks good. No? Okay, they're waving me off. Okay, good. Well, technology is not my friend. Okay, this is not a sign of the end times either. So, short version, this is a movie with Morgan Freeman and Jack Nicholson. Anybody seen this movie? Okay, a bunch of people. Fantastic. So the premise of the movie is Jack Nicholson is this bigwig, hotshot hospital administrator. He gets stuck in a room with Morgan Freeman and because they both have illnesses. And Morgan Freeman has a bucket list. We all are familiar with this idea, right? It's a list of things he wants to do before he kicks the bucket. And so they go off into all these adventures. And it's a beautiful, funny thing. I'm compelled by this idea of a bucket list, and I want to ask you to make one today, but I don't care about what experiences you want to have. And I don't care about what things you want to buy, and I don't really care about places you want to visit. And that's great. I mean, you can have those things. They just don't matter to me. Here's what I want you to think about. I want you to think about, if Jesus came back tomorrow, what would I want to have done before he showed up? If Jesus came back tomorrow, what do I want to not be doing when he arrives? If Jesus came back tomorrow, who would I want to share the gospel with today so they can accept him when he appears? If Jesus came back tomorrow, what do I want him to catch me doing? Because this is the core message of Jesus' teaching to the disciples. He says at the end, I just want you to be ready all the time, right? I just want you to live your lives like keep your eyes open, see, keep awake, because any moment I could be back. And are you going to be ready when I come? So I think it's a beautiful idea for us to say, hey, we need a Jesus bucket list, right? We need a list of things that we want to get out of our lives or get into our lives, people that we want to love or share the gospel with. We need a list of, hey, what do I want to be doing so that when Jesus shows up, like, I'm ready. And I've said this before, in a perfect Christian life, which I'm not living, but in a perfect Christian life, the goal would be really simple. If we knew Jesus was coming back tomorrow, we would all just go have our normal Monday. Because we always live that way. Because we've always chosen to forgive people as quickly as we could. We've always chosen to love people around us as well as we could. We haven't held off telling somebody that we cared about them. We haven't held off telling someone that we've forgiven them because we're ready all the time for Jesus to come back. There's this beautiful image somebody shared with me of the Christian life as a relay race. And the baton just keeps getting passed, right? And so the baton starts with John the Baptist, and he passes it to Jesus. And Jesus passes it to the disciples, and they pass it to the next group of Christians, and it keeps getting passed on to us. And what we don't know is we don't know who the last runners will be, right? We don't know which stage of that relay is the last stage. We don't know when Jesus comes back, but no matter where we are in that race, we're running it to win. We're running it to win. We're running it to say, hey, I want to be able to say at the end of my life, whether it ends dying of old age or dying in a car accident, or whether it ends because Jesus shows up and everything ends, I want to be running so that I could win. I want to be living in such a way that when he shows up, I'm proud of the service I've offered him with my earthly life. Jesus says, see, your deliverer is coming. See, the world is in its birth pains, but I am coming to make everything right. Keep awake and be ready to see me. Let's live with our eyes open this week. Thanks be to God.